Ladies, gentlemen, boys, and girls, welcome back to another episode of the TPN Podcast. It is I, Adam Juhan, your host. We're doing a video podcast or vlog or whatever the kids, millennials, call it these days. This is our first one with guests that we're actually going to do. I've been starting to do some videos on Facebook Live and seeing what the reaction is. Obviously, there's some people out there who can't stand to see my mug. There's others who actually enjoy it, and those people are crazy. But maybe it's just the sound of my wonderful voice or the fact that I'm trying to just deliver some cool Pilot Network-y information to you today. So I am joined by two of our fantastic members and some of our newest partner sponsors from Upgrades Day, Justin and Chloe. I'm not going to murder their last names, but I'm going to try. It's Justin Whelan and Chloe Zahara, right? Am I right, guys?
Good job.
Okay. Cool. Hey, look at that. Not that I didn't practice or ask them beforehand, but either way, they are the principals and the founders of Upgrades Day, but they also have some really cool backgrounds in aviation, and then they turn into these people trying to help other people out. Justin was an F-15 pilot in the military, obviously the Air Force, and Chloe is a flight attendant who started off at one airline and then moved to another. I'll let them tell you their stories. I want to welcome them to not only the Pilot Network, to being partner sponsors, but to the podcast. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Pretty good. Glad to be here and glad to be working with the Pilot Network.
Awesome. Well, first things first, they're out on the West Coast. So they're in like the nice, sunny, beautiful, whatever. But were you guys affected by the earthquake at all? Do you feel anything, or were you guys way out away from that?
Oh yeah, my car was like shaking left and right when we were in it. But okay. The house was undamaged when I got back home.
Okay, good. Chloe, everything's okay?
I was in Minnesota, friends and family, so I got it over social media. And I
was okay, like, good.
I hope my ear didn't fall, but everything's good here.
So. Okay, good. I'm glad everything, no damage. Everything's okay. I was out there for the earthquake myself, but I was just in a hotel, and I just left the next day and said, "Wait, man, I hope everything's all right around here." But it seems like everything.
I saw your Facebook Live or your video that you
had. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, my little video. Yeah, that was in the morning after when I was like, oh, you know what? I better do something just to, it was the easiest way to tell mom and wife and kiddo that, hey, dad's fine. Because I don't even think they do the little check-in thing. But here we are. We're fine. Everybody's good. And we have some pretty cool stuff that we wanted to talk about, because I think one of the things that's been problematic that I've talked to a lot of folks about recently, in fact, I just ran into a guy who was coming back from New York, and he was going home for one night to see his wife and his kids. But he said, man, I'm going to get home. They're busy today. They're doing stuff. I'm going to go home, cut the grass and whatever. He said, but you know what? I just don't want to spend another day in the crash bed. And I said, yeah, man, I totally know that. So we'll get to that later on. Let's start off with you, Justin. F-15 guy, we said you commissioned back in the 90s, mid-90s, late 90s. How did you first get into aviation? Where was your first interest in becoming a pilot?
My dad had a little Cessna. I grew up in Oakley, Kansas, real small farm town. And so I liked that, but I just really, what happened is I visited the Air Force Academy when I was a kid. And that was my ticket out of, farming didn't really seem like the career that I was destined for. And so I was super excited. I actually toured all of the service academies and got into the Air Force Academy. And from there, it was just a straight line in terms of, you graduate, you get selected for pilot training, and then you become a pilot, and then, you do well, and you get selected for fighters, and then you get an F-15, and it all just kind of happened. I think from the time I sent in, I remember putting in the little application to the Air Force Academy when I must have been 17 and be like, oh, this is a big, and then I got accepted. And I think everything else beyond that in some ways was out of my control. I just did the best I could along the way and then became a pilot, and it was a fantastic career. I just was fortunate to be able to, try and do something else afterwards as well.
So, yeah. Oh, well, that's, I think that's the thing. I was just talking to this about this with another friend of mine, military guy, entrepreneur type. And one of the things we both discussed was how we think there's a dearth of individuals who just don't have that next step in mind after they get out of the military. They're not quite sure what their talent is. They're like, well, I fly airplanes, or I'm a logistician, or I was a group commander, or whatever the case is. But they don't, that's not a talent. That's a position that you learned, that's a job or a vocation that you may have done. That's not necessarily your talent. Your talent will take you to do that. And I think what you guys did was you took your talent and moved on that after you did what you did. So Chloe, where did you, we talked about it before. Chloe wanted to travel the world. So where did you want, where was the first destination you wanted to travel to when you said, I'm going to be a flight attendant and I'm going to go see the world?
So funny you asked that question. So when I got out of training, you get 6 days to move all of your items. I was going to be based in San Francisco, and I was living in Seattle at the time, so I chose to commute, especially for the expensive reasons. But they gave you 6 days, and I was like, I don't need 6 days. And so I called my brother, and I go, hey, do you have your passport? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, it's Oktoberfest in Munich. Let's go for the weekend. It's on my first flight, benefits, everything's all ready to go. You're on the benefits. Let's go. And so he was like, okay. And so he was living in Oklahoma at the time. We met in Chicago. We flew over, got seats, flew over, stayed for the weekend, got on the flight back, and I actually had to jump seat back from Munich to Newark, landed back into Newark, and then showed up, I think, 2 days later and started my career as a flight attendant.
Wow. So for those of you who don't understand what jump seating would be like, especially even the pilots who think, oh, I kind of know from friends of mine, especially military guys who have no idea what that means, jump seating in the flight attendant jump seat, I can't think, I would probably rather ride in a stagecoach across the Atlantic Ocean if that was doable, yes, than be on the flight attendant jump seat. I've done it from Milwaukee to Detroit, and that's hell on earth, and that's 41 minutes. So yeah. I'm sure there was just a lot of walking around the airplane at times. And
yes. Well, yeah, because you have, gosh, what was that flight? 7 or 8 hours. And they had a little area for, you know, their crew rest. And so, but I only got to sit in that for like an hour. So the rest of the time it was walking around because they were having their crew rest or trying to stay out of their way. Carts are everywhere. People are asking me questions and I'm like, I'm brand new. Like I just started. And also flight attendants are like, you are crazy. And the fact that you just non-repped and now you're jump seating and you just got hired. Like you haven't even started your line yet. And I'm like, nope. And they're like,
and would you just leave your brother in Germany?
No. He got a seat. Okay. Oh, yeah. He got a seat. And I took the jump seat so he can have the seat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a sister who loves her brother.
Sisterly love.
Yeah, sisterly love indeed. Well, I mean, I think that's kind of, if I were to say the same thing, for me, you know, it's kind of travel and all that stuff too. And the network has heard enough times why I started into aviation. But I think one of the things that we don't talk about is what happened. What was the motivation after you're done? So once you're done, like Justin, you finished up the Air Force and then you go, okay, wow, I'm in my late 30s, early 40s, whatever it is. What the hell do I do now? I don't necessarily want to be an airline pilot. I don't necessarily want to go work in the corporate world. I don't know what I want to do. How do you go from badass F-15 pilot to, all right, now I'm going to sit home and pick up woodworking or golf? I mean, I like both of those things, and don't get me wrong, but there's almost got to be a little bit more something else there to sink your teeth into. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, it took a long time. Like, because I thought I would be able to find a good job and find something really interesting. And, you know, honestly, I left the Air Force 10 years ago. And I've done some really interesting jobs between now and then. And I've got to travel a lot. But this is the first thing that I thought, oh, this might have been worth it for leaving the service. And, you know, because what happened for me is I applied to business schools before I got out. And I got accepted to Harvard Business School. And I was like, okay, that's good enough. I'm willing to give up what I've got to do it. Because, I mean, it's a, you know, a prestigious thing. And it was a really good experience. No, and I thought once I was there, then I would figure out what I was going
to do. Yes.
Yep. It doesn't work, man. You do not figure out what you want to do at business school. Or if it didn't for me, I didn't see it happen for a lot of other people. It's just everybody is like, well, I guess I'll go into consulting because it's a highly paid job and you travel, but it's really, you know, you long hours and a lot of people are unhappy in that career. And I did. I got a job at a big consulting company at BCG. And it wasn't a fit because I was asking the question you are, which is like, I gave up my F-15 career for this. Yeah. It was rough. It took a long time to find, you know, what you want to do. And I think everybody that leaves the service for any sort of a career where, you know, you're performing at a really high level or you're in some sort of elite group in your 20s, it's hard to do something different in your 30s and 40s. Especially because what you need to do and what I needed to do, and I didn't know it, was do some other jobs where I was kind of at the bottom, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sales, you know? I did a lot of sourcing for this consumer products company here in San Diego, and I traveled to India, and, you know, I was driving on dirt roads, going to factories, you know? Similar feeling, like, I don't know if leaving the Air Force was a really good call. Yeah. But all of that experience ended up being really, really valuable when Chloe and I met and we decided to start this business. And then the connections you make in business school are also super helpful at the point you're ready to do something like we're doing now. You know, business school as an experience is really helpful now. It really wasn't in like the 8 to 10 years afterwards, except for the fact that, you know, I got a good job right out of school and it's kind of this good resume thing, but you know, you can also be over experienced. You know, they're like, you know, you're an F-15 pilot and you've got a Harvard MBA and you're like, I just kind of want an entry level job at a tech company so I can learn how to do things.
Yep.
You're not really who they're looking for.
Nope.
You know? And so you got to go out and get experience at a low level in some other career that interests you. And that transition can be really rough. And it was rough for me. And I don't know anybody of my friends who have gotten out who haven't had, you know, a little bit of a struggle trying to find the right balance, find the right place to land after you give up a career where those paychecks come in every week, no matter how well you do. And you get per diem, and you get BAH, and you get the GI Bill. And you leave and you're like, oh my gosh, the benefits and pay is outstanding in the military, and people think it's not, but it is.
You make some valid points. I think one of the things we talk about with military guys, just when we have chances to chat on the network, is the whole thing about when you leave the military, there's a good chance that if you're not retiring as an 06 or above, and even if you are, there's a good chance you're starting at the bottom somewhere else, and you have to get over the fact that you're not in the same position. You're not the big fish in the little pond anymore. You might be a big fish still, but you might be in a huge pond, or you might be the little fish in a very big pond. When you get hired in an airline, you go to the bottom and you start your labor. Now, you used to be management when you were a pilot in the Air Force.
Yeah.
Now you're labor and you're a bottom feeding number who has no seniority and gets no holidays off and all that stuff. And no matter whether you're starting in an airline or you're starting in a consulting firm where maybe you are making big, huge buku bucks, you're going to be working 12 to 14 hour days because that's what's required of you to do, to make that money and do those big things. And I think we have that perspective. Now, a totally different perspective is somebody who's coming up in the flight attendant world and who has not that same kind of perspective. Like, hey, I'm joining this group of people that, what's up?
Oh, it just cut out a little.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. No, wait, sorry. So you have this group of people that you're just joining for the first time. Like, yeah, aviation, I've been on airplanes before. Or maybe I flew a little bit. Maybe, you know, one of my parents was a flight attendant or something, or pilot. But then you show up and you go, all right, so I'm going to do this. And we see this in, we both see this, lots of flight attendants. They start doing it at a young age and then they go, well, I'm just doing this for the time being until the next thing comes up. And the next thing they know, they've been doing it for 20 years and the next thing never came up. And they're going, oh my gosh, I want to do something else. And they're scared to let go of that. It's almost like the military person who's like, the paychecks keep coming in. So how do you take that jump and then utilize, like you said, the connections that you have with Justin and whatever? You get those connections and then boom, off you go. How does that work? How does that form into what you guys have done?
Yeah. So, okay. Sorry. It cut out. It's, you're a little frozen. So okay. I missed a bit of the question, but it was about flight attendants being in for a long time. And then how does it connect with meeting with Justin? Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Hang on. So I'll just do one of these there. That should help out. I'll restart. So
yeah, I just kind of want to repeat that whole question because yeah. Your audio was cutting out a couple of times.
No, no problem. No problem. So yeah, I think one of the big things that we have that's it's almost a mirror image of what happens to military folks, but in the flight attendant world, like you started and Chloe, just to verify in your background, you didn't have a lot of aviation experience, right? You weren't a private pilot. You weren't any of that. So zero.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are listening and not watching, she held up the big zero sign. So she had been a passenger, but never, that was it. So you go into this world and we know plenty of flight attendants who say, oh, I'm just going to do this for a couple of years, travel a little bit, and then I'm out. And then you meet some flight attendants who said that 30 years ago and they say, hey, this is a great job. But then, so other ones you talk to and they go, but I always wanted to do X and they just don't want to make that jump. How does somebody like you going into a job where you say, I have no experience and I'm going to go get this crash pad lifestyle that I'm just going to try out. And we can talk right about that because this leads right into the question is how do you put it together where, okay, I'm a new flight attendant and now I'm going to start a company called Upgrade Stay and not live in a crash pad anymore. Like how does one go from that to boom, here I am?
Right. Yeah. So I've always kind of had like an entrepreneurial bug in myself and my personality. Part of my business degree was actually entrepreneurship. And so from that, I'd done a few little things here and there, trying to do little business things before I started as a flight attendant. And they didn't really get connected or, you know, come to fruition, so to say.
Sure.
When I became a flight attendant, I was like, this is an amazing job. I really love it. And after a couple of years, you kind of get in this groove of, you know, it's the easy peasy. Oh, I come to work. I check in. You know, I greet people with a big, huge smile. And I'm like, hey, guys, everything's good. And then I'm done and deplane a whole aircraft. But then at the end of the day, I'm kind of like, well, what did I get from that? You know, I just like, it's awesome. It's great to meet people, but I kind of wanted a little bit more. And so beyond the wanting to have more like involvement, like with my brain and doing creative, fun things, I also kind of did it out of necessity as well. Because when you start as a flight attendant, now when I very first started, it was with Alaska and it was, I think, $16.50 an hour. And that was 7 years ago. And luckily And obviously we know this in the aviation industry. Obviously it's for flight hours. It's not for your actual hours that you're at work. And so you're getting paid pennies and you're having to go to training, which you have to go to training for each airline, obviously, as you come into. And those trainings are 6 to 8 weeks unpaid. And then you have to buy all your uniforms and everything like that. And then how the paid schedule works out, you aren't really getting paid for a month or two after you actually start working your reserve line. And so it's just brutal where you're trying to hang in there and starting as a flight attendant. And then trying to also, I was like, okay, well, what else can I do to maybe make a little money and things like that. And so that's kind of where I got started with the crash pad. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I can make a little money as well as save myself some money. By having
So why don't you explain your crash pad? Let's talk about that, because that is, I think, such a unique, just to jump from, hey, I'm here, now I'm going to own one of these things. How did that jump work?
Yeah. So when I got hired with Continental and I was based in San Francisco, I had nowhere to stay, but I luckily had a cousin that lived in the Bay Area. She happened to live on the East Bay at the very end of the BART train system stop. So that train would take you to the airport, which is great. Didn't need a car, left my car and pretty much all my belongings in Seattle, and I commuted down. But in order to get from my cousin's place to the airport, it took over 2 hours. And my call out for reporting to the airport whenever they needed me for reserve was 2 hours. So I was like, okay, this is not going to work long term. I'm literally going to get fired in a couple of months if I don't figure something out. So I looked at these crash pads, and everyone had, there's multiple crash pads around, but they were booked full, like waiting lists of flight attendants and pilots wanting to get into them. And so I was like, oh my gosh, well, what am I going to do? And so scraped every penny I had, and I went to, I got a lease on a place, and I went to IKEA and I bought 7 bunk beds and furniture, dishes, everything you could need for 14 flight attendants to live in a 2-3 bedroom, although the second or the third bedroom was like a den. So it didn't really have a door, but we could fit in there. So it helped with costs and keeping it low, and 2 bathrooms, and it was for 14 flight attendants. And I had a list of like 30 people who were like, can I please stay? I'll sleep on the couch. Like, I don't care. I just need somewhere. And I was like, no, I'm so sorry. I had to cut it off, because there was other ones that were getting really overcrowded, because there's a lot that were flooding in, they were just really build up San Francisco. And so I only stuck to the 14. We'd stay there and we'd sit on reserve, and it was all reserves in the very beginning. It was brutal, but it was an experience. And I actually ran that for about 2.5 years. It was difficult, because so when you run it, instead of just staying in one, you have the headache and the rigmarole, so to say, of like just like going through and being like, okay, I need to make sure I have 14 flight attendants. Oh, someone got their transfer, and their transfer was good in 2 weeks. Great. Susie's moving out. Who do I have to replace her? And so, I'd have to pretty much hunt down other flight attendants, or else if they didn't come in, I didn't feel like it was the other flight attendant's responsibility to cover that. So I would cover myself. Okay. And so that part gets a little like a little crazy and a little nerve wracking when you are covering $350 for one flight attendant that's vacant for 1 month. And then let's leave, you're almost at $1,000, where you're having to come out of your own pocket trying to figure out like, oh my gosh, I need to fill these beds and keep this trash pack going, because no one really had anywhere to stay, So.
And then flying your schedule, and then managing the crash pad as a manager. I'm making sure that your lease is paid, making sure that the cleaning people are doing their job, and that if you've got something that breaks or you've got a water leak.
Weren't you the cleaning person?
I was actually the cleaning person.
What?
I know. I told you, I was living on pennies.
That's the American hustle. You're a hustler. One of the guys I listen to all the time on podcasts, and you can listen to him too. His name's Gary Vaynerchuk, the Gary V audio experience. He always says that you have to tell your friends. So I'm telling all my network friends about it. He talks about hustle. You got to work, you got to put in the effort, and look at where it's come. It's come from Chloe's doing that to now Chloe's the one of the founding members, one of the principal owners and presidents and CEO, whatever the hell you want to call yourself. Right? Like we do at the network, we have all sorts of weird, stupid titles. You've created Upgrade Stay. So how does that go from, how do you figure that one out? Chloe, why don't you lead us on that journey first? Because I think it's such a cool idea. So let's talk about the idea of Upgrade Sin, and then how do you go from crash pad living, not for me, not for everybody. How do we fix that?
Mm-hmm. So like I said, I only did it for about 2.5 years, mm-hmm. and I distanced myself and from that, and I was able to kind of stay I transferred out and I was in LA for a while, and then now I'm in San Diego. And so it wasn't so much on my radar at the moment in time when we got and connected and everything. And so what was I going to say? Oh, well, okay. Yeah. Let me think here. Yeah. You take over. Cause honestly, it was Justin's idea to get it going.
Yeah, well, it started out as a bad idea because what I had, I have a lot of friends that are airline pilots.
Sure.
And I knew about crash pads, and I had seen a lot of the success of all of these co-living spaces in San Francisco. We Live and Solar City, I think.
Star City.
And anyway, there's just the success of these urban co-living spaces, mm-hmm. That are like high-end apartments, but like with kind of dorm style living, where there's just one kitchen and one, one shared living space, and a lot of bedrooms. And I was like, oh, that could really be a better crash pad. And maybe this would work. And I started doing a bunch of research on this. And the best thing that happened is I talked to my friend Jesse, who is a pilot at United. And I was like, do you think this is a good concept? And he's like, I think it might be. But he's like, I got to tell you, you got to talk to some flight attendants. Flight attendants have the big need. He's like, you're focused on what you know, which is pilots and, your friends, but you need to talk to flight attendants. And I had met Chloe at this birthday party. And so I called her up and I was like, Chloe, I've got this idea. And it took us like months to get together.
Yeah.
And she came over to a dinner party that we had at my house. And I said, hey, I've got this idea. And she's like, why are you asking me? Did you know that I ran a crash pad for 3 years? And I was like, no, that's amazing. That's a perfect person to be.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. And also, she's clearly an entrepreneur, and so we researched it for like a month and a half, 2 months. Yeah. And what we were trying to do at the start was a better crash pad. And, Chloe's like, crash pads kind of suck. Do we really want to do, the other problem with it is that it would have been a real estate business and it requires a ton of capital.
Yeah.
And you can't get people at this point in their careers to pay the kind of rents that the urban professionals are paying for.
Sure. Those
spaces. But living spaces in downtown San Francisco and New York are nuts expensive. And we're never going to get that kind of rent from an early career flight attendant. It's impossible.
Or from any pilot because of the cheapest people on the planet.
There's another factor.
Yeah, I say that in somewhat jest. I think most of us know that sometimes we can be a little lean in the pocket, but yeah.
So anyway, we just went over and over about like, well, there's clearly a problem here. And what else could we do is we take it from another angle. And so the angle that we came to and that is the business now is, we are a hotel booking service. So we're negotiating affordable rates on behalf of air crew from all the airlines to try and get private stays at hotels down to sub-market prices. With the option to share a room with one other air crew member that can cut the cost of a hotel stay in half. And so for people who use their crash pad on average, say 5 or 6 times a month, the cost of a half price hotel room is about the same. And so that's kind of the big concept is we want to move everybody that's in crash pads into hotels and make it as affordable as a crash pad. And so it kind of came through a little bit of serendipitous meeting of Chloe and I and knowing about what I believe is a really acute problem. I mean, Chloe has said this multiple times, adult professionals should not have to be living in hostel conditions with an EL.
No, and an ILE too. They're both.
Good one.
And so, you know, can we provide a service that allows a much higher quality, you know, sleep solution for, you know, commuting professionals than the options that are currently out there? And that's the whole vision behind what we're doing. And so, you know, then Chloe's experience like kicked into high gear because she's done a couple of other kind of startup things on her own that we haven't even talked about, you know, while she was a flight attendant, before she was a flight attendant. And she's like, okay, I'm just going to build a website. And we went to San Francisco, we partnered with the DoubleTree Hotel, and Chloe built a website that allowed people to book rooms with upgrade stay that we were booking at the DoubleTree Hotel. And we did a pilot last December, like 2 months, maybe 3 months after we started like kicking around the concept. And we got a bunch of people signed up and people were booking rooms. And so
they liked it.
And we're like, okay, this is, you know, it was kind of a proof of concept.
Sure.
And we did it, you know, if you read the startup books, you know, everybody says like, you just got to put yourself out there and what's your MVP. And, you know, cause we were, you know, we talked to, I think it was Tanya. We talked to my friend Tanya, who's was a designer at Facebook. Mm-hmm. We're asking her how we should build this app and how we should go about it. She was like, do not go build an app. What is wrong with you? You don't even know what you need yet. She's like, what is the simplest way that you can find out whether or not people want to do this idea, which sounds like a really good idea, and then talk to people before you and learn from your customers before you spend money building an app. And that's really what we did in December and what we kind of did all throughout this spring is try and, you know, we have a website, you can book rooms on our website, and we've just tried to learn as much as we can about what do pilots want? What do flight attendants want?
Right.
What do the hotels want?
Bump beds.
Yeah. How can we, we put all of these pieces together and build a service that is, you know, sustainable for us, beneficial for flight attendants, great for pilots, and that the hotels like as well, you know, because you're bringing them incremental business. And that's kind of where we are today. So I don't know if I fast forward through.
No, that's called beautiful summation. That was a summary that was perfectly said. I think, I wish you guys would have had something like that when I was crash padding in New York. No, my crash pad, the guys were great. I had a lot of fun. However, I think you hit on something that's really critical. So yeah, staying at a crash pad just sucks. But the part that I think most of us overlook, and it's just because it's the nature of the beast, is the actual quality of rest that you get at a crash pad. It is, first of all, if you're not in your bed at home, it's probably not going to be great. But if you're in a crash pad, it is terrible sleeping because mm-hmm. you have somebody else's alarm going off at an hour and a half before your wake up time is. You have people coming in much later than you. So even with earplugs and a sleep mask, it doesn't work all that well. What does work well is when you're by yourself or even with another person, you potentially not on an opposite schedule anyway, so you might not even see the person, which would be great. What I think I never thought about was how bad the rest I was getting was. In fact, one of the big things, because I'd come back from a trip and I would try to get up really early in the morning to go catch my first flight back to the house. And this is before we had any kids running around. And my wife said to me, she goes, why do you do that? She goes, don't most of the guys get up earlier than you to catch the first flight because they have to go to work? I go, yeah. And she says, so you're getting woken up at about 3:30 in the morning and it's constant until about 5 when you get up to catch your flight out. And you get home at what, midnight? She goes, why don't you just stay until about 10 a.m. and catch the third flight back and then try to get some sleep before you come home so you're not a complete wreck or zombie? And I said, yeah, that's a great point. Well, if I had an option where, okay, I get in at midnight and instead of waking up like that, I could still get maybe 6 hours of sleep straight through and then go and catch my flight. I'm home a little earlier. I'm happy about that. I don't know any pilot or flight attendant who's not happy about that. And I don't feel like garbage. Or if I feel like garbage, it's the minimal garbage, not like the hot pile mess that I was when I used to get home from New York when I first started commuting out of New York. So I wish that you guys would have been around. So if I want to, where are you guys? Well, I think this is the big question because you are new. Where are you guys located right now?
So we first started in San Francisco, and we are in LA as well, and Chicago, and we just opened Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, there's a decently sized airline that is headquartered out of there. I don't remember their name off the top of my head. starts with a D or something, been around for a while.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But I think... my big question, when's New York in the crosshairs? How far away?
Later this month.
Wow. Okay. I was thinking you were going to say later this year, later this month. That's huge.
No, we've got a contract with a hotel in Newark. And what we found is you really can't open a city. You have to open a specific airport because people need to be, people are assigned to an airport. Although New York City is the one exception. Some air crew are actually assigned to the city and can have to report at one of the three airports.
Sure.
But by and large, most air crew are assigned to a specific airport. And so what we're trying to do right now is get three hotel contracts around each airport so that we at least have a supply of rooms. Cause sometimes they sell out at any particular property, and then have a few different options on price points and quality for what, some people prefer the least expensive room possible, and some people want kind of an aircrew standard of what you would expect when you are on a layover.
Okay.
Anyway, there's just a process of, going out, meeting the hotels, meeting the sales managers, getting them comfortable with what you're doing and setting up contracts with them. And then, also we need to build critical mass in each city in terms of like having, for sharing.
Sure. Well, I think your past educational pieces and, Chloe's past, learning on the streets, works together very nice. I mean, talk about a connection or a marriage of fate. You guys were just, it seems like, destined to be working together on something, a project like this, because one has an idea, the other's got some of the experience out of doing it, and then you can put those two together. Wow. I'd like to say Matt and I had the same thing, but Matt is the guy who knows everything. And I was just the guy who can talk for hours on end. So that's how that worked for the pilot network. But you guys actually have real skills and are utilizing them. I think that's pretty cool to see. Well, I think before we go any further on that, I want to make sure people know, and we'll hit this again towards the end. So if Little Adam wants to go. Little Adam FO is going out to New York, and he just became a captain, and he doesn't want to stay at a crash pad anymore because now he's got all that captain money. And I want to do, and you guys have, let's say you have a property in New York. I'm ready to go. How do I go and figure out, get my room and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yep. So right now it's just, you head to our website, upgradestay.com. And right from there, you can just click to sign up. Totally free to sign up. We just have everyone sign up because we want to, we're providing this just to aircrew. And so it's an exclusive membership, kind of like how you guys have. But again, totally free. And then from there, you just do a quick verification. We can verify you just using your driver's license and your information. And then we can verify that you're aircrew. And approve you, and then you can just go to book now and check out whatever type of hotel you want and whatever night, and that's it.
That's too easy. I thought it was going to be way more difficult. You're supposed to be more difficult.
No.
It's going to sound like, because then I was going to have to go, and I was going to have to say, okay, explain, but now that's it. Go to a website, verify, sign up. Technology, man, it's driving me nuts. I can't. Everything's too easy nowadays. Well, I mean, if a bunch of pilots and soon to be other aviation professionals can't figure that out, I don't know what more to help them out on. I mean, if I can figure it out, then you can figure it out. Not you, Chloe, but other people.
It's in our business plan. We have this page called Competitive Advantage. You're supposed to have it. And one of the bullets is simple and easy to use.
Yeah.
Is the needs of aircraft.
Right? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I've said this for years. So it's so funny because pilots in general, I would say more specifically pilots than flight attendants, but pilots, they want, when it comes to their profession, they want it to be as simple or simplified and as easy as possible. Break it down into checklist form. It doesn't matter if it's a very challenging concept, but if you simplify it, aircrew love it. If you put it on a silver platter and say, so like a guy's trying to get a job or a girl's trying to get a job at a certain airline, and you put it on a silver platter and you go, do these checklist steps. They will fork over whatever money. They don't care. They'll just do whatever it takes to get to from point A to point Z and go through all the steps. Now, if they have to rebuild their deck or do foundation repair, they will find the most challenging way to do it themselves, not spend the money on it, whatever the case is. And I'm going, you know what? Because I am the prime example of that. And finally, I just realized, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start using my money to gain back my time instead of the other way around, using my time to gain back my money. I said, it's been a huge quality of life improvement for me. So you guys are making that quality of life improvement for air crew members like myself. And once you guys get LaGuardia JFK in the wheelhouse, I will be full on using that. So I appreciate that immensely. As soon as you guys can do that, sign me up.
So I actually have a question for you on that. And maybe this is exactly what you're answering, but I have a friend who said, you know, once you've got reliable and inexpensive lodging in San Francisco, and he's based in Houston,
yeah,
I'm going to start bidding out of base because I can make more money out of San Francisco than I can out of Houston, but I'm scared to book it or to schedule it because I might get stuck on a night when hotel rooms are $600, which they are all the time in San Francisco.
Sure.
And so I was like, oh, maybe he's like, yeah, I think you can grow the commuting market. And it was something I didn't even consider. I was just curious if that resonates.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it does. Totally. So think of it this way. I'm a commuter. So I commute, whether I'm going to be commuting to New York or to another base. I'm going to be commuting because I live in Milwaukee and there's no base here. And my airline doesn't have a base that I can drive to. So if I bid, I can, in New York, being in New York specifically, is the almost every airline is like that. It's the most junior base. So what could I be in New York that I can't be anywhere else? A captain. And I can make a lot more money as a captain than I can as a first officer. So if I could bid captain and I can be guaranteed that I'm never sitting in a crash pad, and instead of, now if I want to be alone, and I'm willing to fork out a little bit more money to be alone for 7 nights or 8 nights a month than being in a crash pad, oh, you just made my decision a lot easier to go, yeah, I'm going to upgrade because I don't have to work, because you just made the worst part about my commute a non-factor. So now instead of having the stress of going to the crash pad and getting in at 3 a.m. and being the ass who wakes everybody up, I can just roll into my hotel room. I've got my gym. I've got whatever. I can work out. I can get some sleep. I can take a shower and not worry about, you know, okay, I got to put my name on the board, make sure I got a time slot. Like, I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. So
we're adults, people.
Yeah, I'm an adult who makes a fairly decent living, and I'm waiting in line with my towel over my shoulder to brush my teeth. I mean, and the guy I'm waiting for is 10 years older than me. I mean, my goodness, I don't want to do that anymore. And now, does that sound like I'm an entitled person? Maybe. But personally, I've done that. I've done all this in my life, and I don't want to do it anymore. And I think that if you don't want to do it, you've got an opportunity now to do the opposite of that. And I will say, I think everybody should do crash pads for like maybe a month just so they have the feel of it. And then they will never want to do it again. And I can't see how that you, first of all, I can't see how you guys aren't going to have every major airport except for maybe Minneapolis, because everybody lives there. Almost nobody commutes to Minneapolis. Everybody lives there. But other than that, this is going to be such an opportunity for all of us. In fact, I was thinking when you guys said air crew only, I'm going, I think your model is so big. My cousin used to commute from Orange County to New York. Orange County to New York for 3 years, and he wasn't a pilot. Right. And they only paid for the first 6 months of his staying in Manhattan. And then he ended up sleeping at his buddy's place and kicking a little bit of rent, which he felt was, he hated that. But I mean, this is opportunities galore. And he wasn't going to afford, he was making a good deal of money because he was an executive. But still, when you're commuting from Orange County to New York and you're throwing in a gargantuan sum of money to stay close to your building, it ain't worth it. So I think, I don't want to say I like being part of exclusive clubs, but so I don't want you guys to change that, but man, you guys have a really cool business model, and that's awesome. So for those of you who missed it, upgradestay.com, go there, get verified. It's easy to do, as Chloe said, and then book your room. Boom, done. That's it. There you go. I don't know what more you want. And go. Can you tell them where they're, the cities again?
So we're in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Atlanta now.
Okay. And
New York is coming down the pipeline soon.
All right. Awesome. Well, let's start to wrap up a couple things here. I wanted to, since we talked about Upgrade Stay and how you guys are blowing the world up of how to commute and how to sleep. I think one of the things that I like to ask everybody who comes on the podcast, because whether they're an entrepreneur, they're a career aviator, they did something totally off base that's nothing to do with a lot of what we do, what is something that somebody should do today, either be it read, learn, act on it, whatever the case is, to improve their position overall, whether it's as an aviator, as an entrepreneur, or something that you've had some experience with. Justin, we'll start with you. What do you think one of those actions, activities are that they can do today to put themselves in a better position than they were yesterday?
Read Scott Besky's book called Rework.
How do you spell his last name?
Scott Belsky, B-E-L-K-Y.
Okay.
And the book is called Rework. This is for somebody that wants to start a business or that wants to do anything. It is fantastic. One of my developers gave me that book right when we were starting in December. And, you know, it's worth as much as, you know, going to business school, I think. It's just got a lot of stuff in there. It's really short. It'll take you about maybe a day. I really like their approach to, you know, just get out there, get things done, try things. Just go out and try it.
Scott Belsky, Rework. I'll have to put that in my list. And if we get show notes that are halfway decent, we'll try to put them in there. Sometimes we do, sometimes they stink, but we'll try to label it somewhere. So maybe on the app, people can go take a look at what we said today. But yeah, I love it. Scott Belsky, Rework. So go out and read that. Justin says, do it now. And it sounds like one of those things where whether you want to start a business or not, it's about just getting out there and acting on certain things. And I looked it up.
I mean, it's just in general, you know, in terms of like for us starting this business, one of the things I'm glad we did was just, we had an idea and we tried it. And it's one of these concepts that like, when you explain it to other people outside of aviation, you know, they certainly didn't get it in November. People were like, you're doing what? And we thought it was a good idea. And we really launched probably before we were ready, you know,
totally.
In terms of like, we're barely incorporated. I don't even know if we were incorporated as a company. Did you delete this?
Yeah. No, we'll leave this in. That's not a big deal.
The government, I'm just kidding.
But, you know, I'm really glad that we moved at the speed we did in December because the learning we got at such an early stage has been so helpful in terms of like figuring out what we really need to do to create a business that, you know, an investor can get behind and that, you know, we can build something that is really scalable and that helps people exactly like you say.
Yeah, that's I think that's pretty cool. I love stuff like that. That's big into that, both as the aviation guy who needs sometimes to study a little bit more and just get off his butt and do it, and then the guy who's trying to be an entrepreneur sometimes, you know, reading a little bit of motivational stuff or stuff that's actually got some technical aspects to it. You combine those, makes you just work a little bit harder, put a little bit more effort forth, or figure out a better way to do to make your bed instead of doing it, pulling everything off and kind of looking at it and saying, okay, which way, you know, maybe finding a partner to help you out. So your partner, Chloe over here, what would you suggest? Something that
the right corner, not the left. No.
That you need to do today to improve your position.
Yeah. So I know it's kind of funny because I was going to kind of chime in and say the same thing of just like actually getting out there and doing things, more so from like the flight attendant standpoint of, you know, a lot of us get really involved into our work because this aviation type of position, like these, the pilot and flight attendant positions, are so, time, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Time consuming. They're so time consuming out, like, beyond just your working hours, because you have to schedule yourself. You have to bid for your schedule. You have to then trade your days or your trips. And then you have to get to and from work. And even just if you live 10 minutes from the airport, it's going to take you over an hour to get into that work. So beyond just the few hours that you get paid in flight, you are doing a massive amount of time and energy towards your job. And a lot of people get wrapped up into it. And the drama and the mundane all day, every day type of situation where when they get out of it, they don't think about anything else, you know, and they're just wrapped up in their career. And they, like you said, in a blink of an eye, it's, oh, I'm starting, this is my first year. And now it's 20 years in. And you're like, what have I done? I haven't done anything. And so I would say just kind of taking a step back from your current position, you know, if you are a flight attendant or pilot, and just going like, hey, do I want to do anything outside of this, part-time, full-time, you know, more than full-time than outside of this. And, because with our, like our job and our schedule, you totally can do that. We have such a crazy schedule that you have the opportunity to do something that you want to do. It can be anything. So I just tell everyone, get out there and just try and do something, or just learn about something different that you never really thought that would, you know, be entertaining to yourself or think that you'd want to do, but you try it and then you go down that path and boom, a real estate agent, or you're starting a company, that you never would have thought of doing, had it not been just trying to think outside the box.
I can chime in there, on that one. I met a flight attendant, 6 or 7 months ago, and she is a novelist. She wrote and published her second or third fiction novel. And I believe it was a crime drama kind of a thing. And she is sold a lot of books, and she liked to write, and she was into creative writing, and that's what she did. And she said it was very scary to do that first book, because what if you get rejected? And I remember when we made the first podcast for the Pilot Network, that was my biggest fear, that I'm going to put something that's out there that's crap. And now it was crap. And honestly, like, most of the stuff that I do isn't very good. It's the guests who make the show, but you have to just accept the fact that you're at least doing it, and not everybody is going to do that. And if you give it a try, you'd be surprised at the response you get, because what did they say? Fortune favors the bold. So just try it. You may think it's the dumbest thing in the world, or you may think everybody else thinks that, but you want to give it a try, do it. Do it and don't look back. Have fun with it. And I think that you guys are doing it, and Upgrade Stay is going to be something that is going to take over in the world of how to get a little bit better at commuting and how to be a little bit more rested when you go to work. So I'm going to last question for both of you. And I forgot that we call these, it's my little cheese ball idea. We call them memory items. We used to call them boldface in the military. It's stuff that I want people to remember coming away from the show. And obviously the first memory item is to go to upgradestay.com and check out what they're doing over there and how it can help you benefit from your career and possibly make a lot more money if you want to utilize it for that, which is a great way to think about it. The second memory item is go read the book Rework by Mr. Belsky, Scott Belsky, I think his name is. And then
so I also have a correction on that. I was doing a little research because I thought I crossed my wires on the book. Scott Belsky wrote the book The Messy Middle, which is also a really good book for Rework is like Heinemann. It's two guys. Anyway, so we might
need to clarify.
Yeah, we might want to clarify that.
I'll rework it and clarify for everybody. So we'll be good.
Just answer the question again.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Right. No, we'll use the whole thing, and I'll make sure that it gets written out correctly. So,
okay, yeah. So go out and read the book Rework.
Yes,
that one is number one on my list. And then the other book that has been helpful for us is called The Messy Middle, and that's about all of the years in between starting and either being successful or deciding to shut down a business. And there's usually like 4 or 5 years, and nobody writes about all the ups and downs on those. And like we're at the very, very beginning of that. But I can see the value in just knowing that you're going to have to go through a lot of successes and failures on the mini scale in between now and where you're going. And so those two books I've kept in my mind over the last 6 months, and they've been both very helpful.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of like an aviation career. It starts off pretty rough, but very exciting. And then it seems to get less exciting, and it's still a lot of fun, but it can be very rough at times, and you have to get through that to come out on the other side. And whatever that other side is, normally better, whether it's a military retirement, it's getting to an airline, it's getting the dream job in your hometown or whatever the case is. But that's part of the aviation career. And then it's finding, and I actually did a podcast that I don't know if I've released it, and I'm not sure I'm going to. It's called The What Next Theory. And the what next theory happens to aviation professionals more than anybody else, because you set these goals for yourself and then you hit them and you realize that you still have years and years and years to go before. It's really challenging. Like a lot of Air Force pilots, for instance, and my goal was to get my wings. Well, I got my wings. I was 23, 24 years old. Whoops. What's next? And I didn't have another goal after that, because that, especially when you're younger, you don't realize that there's so much time left to go do these other things. And I had to reevaluate and figure out what was next. And what was next took me years and years and years to figure out. And personally, I figured out I wanted to be a dad, and I wanted to kind of change my perception on what I did personally. And then the second piece was professionally. I said, okay, I want to get to an airline. Well, I'm there now. I'm at the airline I wanted to be at. And then, okay, what's next after that? And then I said, you know, maybe it's to grow this business and do some different things and help people out in a different way than I ever thought about. Now I'm able to set these goals off in the future and say, okay, I want to do this, I want to do that. And now there's too many and I have to pare them down and say, okay, no, let's focus on a couple. So I think that sounds like a kind of book, and I'm going to have to get on that to take a look for more than just the business. Business applies to life in so many ways. I think it's funny that way. So with the next and the last, so the memory item from Justin is go read the books Rework and The Messy Middle. And then Chloe said, just get out there and do. So kind of like, she sounds like a certain footwear ad, just do it. But I think more importantly is just don't be afraid to do it. Don't be afraid to do it, I think is kind of exactly what we all need to hear. And then finally, just real quick, in a one sentence or less, maybe in one word, little phrase, what was the most helpful advice you've received throughout not only this process, but just anything in your aviation lives?
More applies to aviation, but overall life is, you never know where someone's come from during the day when you meet them and where their attitude is coming from, whether it's like really happy, but more so the negative ones. Mm-hmm. just kind of taking that always into consideration every time I meet someone, I think is really beneficial in business and in definitely as a flight attendant. So
that sounds like something I'm going to tell my daughter when she gets older. I need to hear that one again, because hey, everybody, remember, you don't know what the person next to you, they may be having a pretty bad day and they're living through something that's really torturous to them and they've got to be somewhere they don't want to be. So give them a break before you judge.
Yep.
Exactly. I love it. Yeah. Justin, you have most helpful advice.
Always be learning. Yeah. Just constantly, like, find something. If you're in between careers, or if you're a pilot, or if you are, you know, and you're thinking, gosh, now I have all this idle time, what can I be doing? There are millions of training videos on YouTube that you can learn how to be a designer, how to mm-hmm. be a coder, how to build a business. Just start learning some of them if you're not ready, because, you know, we don't have any funding right now, and I just had to teach myself how to learn these design programs. And now I'm able to do a little bit of design work, even though it's at a, you know, some sort of amateur scale, but then I can have a little professionals help me, but I put all of the hours into building something.
Yeah.
And so that's just, I heard that a number of years ago, and it's very helpful in terms of just continue your education at all times throughout your life, whether you're, you know, 25 or 65, because you'll always be growing.
I love it. I'm a huge fan. That's why we do it. That's why we do everything we're doing at the Pilot Network. Always be learning. Whether it's you're starting your career and you think, hey, I just got hired at FedEx or United or American and I'm good to go forever, or you just upgraded to captain at Frontier and you said, this is the airline I'm going to stay at. Guess what? Most likely you still have another 25 to 35 years left in your career. And some of the captains that I've been flying with who are getting ready to retire are starting to look at what's next for them. So, and they're turning 65 and they're starting to learn that, oh my gosh, I got to start learning again. And some of them have been doing it the whole time. And I think they're going to be set up for a lot of success. And I think with the help of people like Chloe and Justin and their team over at Upgrade Stay, you're going to be set up for a lot of success. If you go to upgradestay.com, take a look at what they're offering you. Yes, this is a total ad right now. I'm totally selling them, but that's my job. They've already told us how great of a product that they have, and they're members of the network. And that is a big deal. So Justin, Chloe, besides upgradestay.com, anywhere else that they can come out and reach you guys?
We're on Instagram.
Yeah.
We're on Facebook.
All the social media things and stuff that the millennials do.
Awesome.
In San Diego, and we can go out for dinner.
Oh, look at that. So
layover.
Those of you on San Diego layovers, hit them up. You never know. You never know. I try to treat people to drinks if they're ever out on the town, and we're out with the Pilot Network. It's always on the house if I can run into somebody. So hit them up on social, upgradestay.com. If you guys don't know how to use social media, there's a YouTube video for that. Go type it in. That too. So just like Justin said.
Learn about it.
Yeah, learn about it. So I want to thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You know how to reach us. If you don't, heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org or social media, direct message us within the app, Matt or I. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Or you know what? Send a smoke signal. Do something. Make a fuss in the Facebook group. We'll come find you. But if you don't want to talk to us, remember, try to keep the shiny side up and the greasy side down. Fly safe. We'll see you again soon.